The future of online TV is here.
View exclusive content from your favorite talk radio hosts and new programs that you can't see anywhere else. Visit voiceamerica.tv today.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Everything starts with a design. Art, fashion, architecture, just about everything. Wouldn't you like to know more about what inspired the designer and why they designed something as they did? Welcome to Dishing the Dirt on Design with hosts Ann Asher and Eleanor Schrader Schappa. We'll speak to some of the most renowned names in the field of design, along with Ann and Eleanor's comments and flair. Let's get started. Here's Ann and Eleanor.
Hello, and welcome to Dishing the Dirt on Design. I'm Ann Asher.
And I'm Eleanor Schrader Schappa, and the holiday season is well upon us, and I hope you've been enjoying yourself with lots of activities.
Absolutely, Eleanor. I wouldn't miss a thing.
Of course. Well, whether you celebrate Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, or any other holiday during the winter solstice, many traditions abound that we all celebrate. The word Christmas comes from the Old English Christmas, meaning the Mass of Christ. Jesus Christ was probably not born on December 25th. The early Christian church did not celebrate Christ's birth until 440 AD, but the date was set in December so that the Catholic Church could compete with rival pagan rituals held at that time of year, especially during winter solstice in the Northern Hemisphere, which is a traditional time of celebration among many ancient cultures. The original significance of December 25th is that it was a Roman festival day of the sun god Sol Invictus. The origins of Santa Claus began in the 4th century with St. Nicholas, Bishop of Myra, which is in present-day Turkey. St. Nicholas was famous for his benevolence towards the poor and was particularly devoted to children. Our modern figure of Santa Claus is derived from the Dutch, and the Dutch spelling of Sint Nicholas eventually became Sinterklaas. Dutch children would leave their wooden shoes by the fireplace, and Sinterklaas would reward good children by leaving little gifts in their shoes. And then the Dutch colonists brought this tradition with them to America, and the Anglican name of Santa Claus emerged.
St. Nicholas is depicted throughout history as a bearded saint wearing bishop's robes. The Santa Claus figure we know today was popularized by an 1823 poem that was written by Clement Clark Moore, and it was called A Visit from St. Nicholas, which later became the famous 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. Don't we all know that?
Yes.
Now, he had a broad face and a little round belly. Oh, did he have a little round belly. And that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. He was chubby and plump and a right jolly old elf. And I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. In the 19th century, the famous political cartoonist Thomas Nast also helped to define Santa's image as a heavyset fellow with a red suit and a white beard in his illustrations for the famous Harper's Weekly. Those images were further promoted by no less than White Rock Beverage Company and our very famous, world-famous Coca-Cola.
And where did the idea of Santa's reindeer come from? Possibly from Nordic origins. The Norse god Odin had an eight-legged horse named Sleipnir, S-L-E-I-P-N-I-R, that could fly through the sky. Children would leave carrots or straw near the chimney for Sleipnir to eat, and then Odin would reward those children for being kind to his horse by leaving gifts for them. And then the poem, "'Twas the Night Before Christmas," named Eight Tiny Reindeer. Say it with me, Anne.
Now Dasher,
now Dancer, now Prancer, and Vixen. On Comet, on Cupid, on Donner, and Blixen. I love that. That's just so delightful.
I adore it. It is wonderful. Yes. I love Rudolph.
And then when I was doing my research, I ran across the Yule goat. I think that's absolutely delightful. The English Father Christmas rides in for Christmas on a Yule goat, and so I'm all over that one right now.
And by the way, Eleanor, my family still to this day leaves vegetables,
yes,
milk, and freshly baked Christmas chocolate chip cookies,
yes,
for Saint Nick, Santa Claus, before we go to bed on Christmas Eve.
Absolutely.
We wouldn't miss a year. And the big trick is that Mom and Dad have to remove all that before the children get up in the morning, or else we've blown the cover.
That's right.
Now, where did Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer come from? He's my very favorite. Well, as silly as this may seem, and we're going to go all the way back to 1939, it came from the famous store, which unfortunately we do not have anymore, called Montgomery Ward. In 1939, Montgomery Ward asked one of its employees, copywriter Robert May, to create a children's book for them to give out at Christmas time. Can you believe that 2.5 million books were given out that year in 1939? That's a pretty big slice of the children population. May's brother-in-law, songwriter Johnny Marks, wrote the lyrics and melody for the song, and it was recorded by the very famous Gene Autry in 1949. And for those of you who are too young to know who Gene Autry was, he was our very famous Hollywood cowboy who made all kinds of wonderful movies, and there is a Gene Autry Museum California, Southern California, to this very day. And I'm sure you'd all love to see it when you come here.
And there was a wonderful story about Robert May in writing this story about Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. He had been teased a lot as a child because he was very frail, and so he wanted to write a story about a reindeer that was kind of left out of playing with all of his reindeer friends because he had that big old red bulbous nose. And, of course, at the end of the song, he's now included, and he now leads Santa's his sleigh. So it's a wonderful story about making friends and inclusion in the holiday spirit.
Eleanor, that is great, and thanks for giving me that story. That's a beautiful Christmas gift.
Isn't that wonderful?
And
yes,
the same thing for all of our listeners.
That's
Eleanor
right.
has given it to not just me, Anne, but to all of you who are listening out there to tell your children.
Well, how about that jolly old Saint Nick getting down the chimney to deliver the gifts? Well, it's kind of a combination of several legends, which also includes the story of why stockings are hung by the fireplace. Clement Moore, in his story or in his poem, describes how the stockings were hung by the chimney with care. We've also talked about the Norse god Odin's horse flying near chimneys to eat food left by children. So the legend might have started with Saint Nicholas, who heard about a poor man with three daughters who could not afford a proper dowry for them to marry. So without a proper dowry, in order to earn money, they might have had to turn to prostitution. So in the spirit of anonymous charity, and possibly to save the father the embarrassment of having to accept charity, Saint Nicholas went to the man's house and threw three purses filled with coins through a window for each of the three daughters. And then another version of the story has Saint Nicholas throwing a bag of gold into the chimney, and one of the daughters had washed her stockings and left them over the fire to dry. And so the bag of gold fell into the stocking, and that's why we hang our stockings with care.
Eleanor, that is a fabulous story. I absolutely love it.
Isn't that
it's
wonderful?
Wonderful. And I don't know if it's made up or not, but it sounds pretty good to me.
Yes.
It really does. We'll be back with more holiday cheer and traditions on Dishing the Dirt on Design. Stay with us.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com. Make your dreams come true. When you want the very best excellence and elegance in interior design, contact Ann Asher, named one of the world's top 40 interior designers by the Robb Report. Visit her website at www.annasherinteriors.com or send an email to info@annasherinteriors.com. Tune into the Voice America Variety Channel on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Voice America Variety broadcasts a diverse array of topics reaching a global community. Our experts come from all walks of life, and the topics they discuss are everything from current events, arts and entertainment, leadership, parenting, relationships, self-improvement, career advice, and a variety of other topics. Check us out today. You're sure to find something of interest. Voice America Variety. Talk on today's hot topics. Tune into Around the World in a Glass, presented by Sportsman's. We're a show all about wine, spirits, and other beverages. Your host, Kimber Stonehouse, is a professional expert and wine enthusiast. Each week, we'll focus on a different region of the world, discuss wines and other beverages, talk about some of the top restaurants in the region, and what to pair with which wine. Just listening could make you almost an expert. Around the World in a Glass is heard live every Wednesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com. You are tuned in to Dishing the Dirt on Design with Ann Asher and Eleanor Schrader Schappa. For more information about our program, please visit DishingTheDirtOnDesign.com. Now, back to the show.
Dishing the Dirt on Design. We are talking about holiday traditions. Eleanor, did you ever write a letter or a series of letters to Santa Claus? I'd love to hear your answer.
I sure did. I think all little kids did, and the post office has created a whole way for children to write letters to Santa Claus. And just like all kids, I did. I don't remember what I asked for. And just as you were talking about before, Anne, I too left milk and cookies out for Santa, and I was absolutely thrilled when one year there was a bite taken out of one of the cookies. And, of course, it had been my Uncle Paul who had done that, and I had learned that later. I thought it was my parents who had done it that one particular Christmas, and so that kind of made it very special for me. And then I just learned that not everybody leaves out milk and cookies. In Ireland, the children leave out mince pie and a Guinness.
Oh, boy.
And in Australia,
Santa can get a little tipsy by the end of the night.
You know, talk about Santa drunk driving. My goodness.
Right.
And then in Australia, they leave out a glass of sherry and minced pie. And then I also remember receiving a beautiful red pinafore, and I was absolutely convinced that Mrs. Claus had made it. And I spent hours and hours trying to mathematically figure out how Santa got all those gifts in his sleigh and how he got to all the houses. Now, of course, Santa's elves helped him make all the gifts, but the delivery part, pre-Federal Express, really stymied me.
And anyone who knows Eleanor and knows about her background knows that she was a budding accountant as a tiny little girl as she was trying to figure out the delivery system and the capability of what the sled could hold. And she later became an accountant.
Oh, my goodness.
She's had many wonderful careers.
Well, Anne, tell me about the elves.
Oh, the elves. That's very exciting, the elves. Santa's elves probably appeared in 1850, when the very noted authoress, Louisa May Alcott, who was the author of Little Women, completed but never published a book entitled Christmas Elves. Also, there were illustrations of elves going all the way back to 1873 on the cover of the magazine Godey's Ladies' Book, showing Santa Claus surrounded by elves and toys, with the caption, "Here we have an idea of the preparations that are made to supply the young folks with toys for Christmas time." Now, Godey's book was very influential on Christmas traditions and also showed the first widely circulated picture of, guess what, a Christmas tree. Mm-hmm. And it was on the cover of the 1850 Christmas issue. Can you believe that before 1850, we didn't really have Christmas trees as a tradition in this country?
Right.
And Eleanor will take up and it will pick up here, and she will tell you where the rest of the tradition of that came
from.
Well,
how this started was with Germany, and they're credited with starting the tradition in the 16th century when Germans brought trees decorated with apples, flowers, candles, and colored paper into their houses. Martin Luther, the 16th century Protestant reformer, added lighted candles to the tree. Walking home one winter evening, he was inspired by the twinkling of the stars between the evergreens, and he wanted to recreate the image for his family, so he put candles on a fir tree in the main room of his house. I think that's such a delightful sight. That has been so beautiful.
So beautiful.
Yes. And then in Victorian times, the Christmas tree was brought to England by Queen Victoria's husband, Prince Albert, who was German. And then the Pennsylvania Dutch, who are actually German, brought the tradition to America.
Probably the most famous Christmas tree in the whole world, or at least the way we look at the world from the United States, is the wonderful tree in Rockefeller Center. Now, this tree came about in 1931 when the first tree was put on that site that you can look down from Fifth Avenue and see that beautiful tree. And it was placed by construction workers at the construction site. But it didn't have any decorations on it. It was the Depression time. And this must have been a welcome sight for people just to see a beautiful, beautiful tree in all its glory. But like all of us, we want to decorate things and make them very pretty. So 2 years later, another tree was placed there, this time with lights. Today, the Rockefeller Center tree has over 30,000 Christmas lights on it. Now, that's a big number, 30,000. And the record for the tallest tree, rather, was in 1948 with a 100-foot Norway spruce that came from Connecticut. Yay for Connecticut.
Yes.
This year, the tree is an 80-foot Norway spruce. And guess what? It comes from New Jersey, and it survived Hurricane Sandy. Mm. Now, that's a big hooray and a thank you for God for sparing as anything that was spared in that awful storm that happened this fall in New Jersey. The tree will be up until January 7th, so you still have time to get there and see it. Then it will be cut down for lumber to build homes for Habitat for Humanity, which is a magnificent organization that builds homes for people with volunteer help all around our country and maybe even abroad.
And you've been in New York during the tree lighting ceremony. Do you have a special place that you like to view it from?
Absolutely. I was so fortunate to be invited to an office right in Rockefeller Center that looked down right at the skating rink, so that we were looking at the skaters and we saw the beautiful tree and the ceremony, and they had a party in the office. Oh, that was just magnificent, and I will never forget the excitement of it and looking down and seeing all the beauty that was part of that Christmas and every Christmas that they do. I think Rockefeller Center, by the way, deserves a lot of credit because it isn't only at Christmas time that they decorate. They use that as a constant living museum or everyday special occurrence for people. They have Easter, they have holidays, I was there recently, and they had created a cranberry bog right in front of 30 Rock Center, as a matter of fact. And they were showing us the cranberries and everything else like that, and that was leading up to Thanksgiving. Oh, they do marvelous things,
and
they're really
to
be congratulated because they make that very busy area of Manhattan, which is basically so much concrete, very little greenery, and they turn it into something that people flock to, and it's they go out and get out of the canyons and the concrete, and they just have a great time.
And all of the holiday store decorations, that's
just
great fun.
It is a beauty. It's a beauty.
Well, speaking of holiday greenery, mistletoe was used by Druid priests in their winter rituals. They found the plant quite mystical as it had no roots, but still stayed green in the cold winter months. And then the Celts believed that it had healing powers and used it as an antidote for poison and infertility. It was also seen as a symbol of peace, and Norse legend holds that when enemies met under mistletoe, they must put down their weapons. And it's also associated with the Norse goddess of love. And then in Victorian times, mistletoe became a sort of love charm, and clumps of mistletoe were hung in halls to serve as an icebreaker between couples to engage in a chaste kiss. If a girl wasn't kissed under the mistletoe, she could expect to remain single for the following year, hence the motive to linger under the mistletoe.
The tradition of Christmas cards started with Sir Henry Cole in England. He was the first director of the very wonderful Victoria and Albert Museum in London, a must-see when you're in London. He was terribly busy in the Christmas season, and in 1843, he was so busy that he couldn't write his individual greetings to his friends. So he commissioned an artist by the name of John Horsley to design a card. Now, Horsley produced a three-panel card. The two side panels depicted regular citizens performing good deeds of feeding the hungry and supplying clothes for the needy. And the center featured a rousing party of both adults and children partaking of wine, which made the British temperance movement go crazy, as you can imagine. The card was inscribed with "A Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to you." Then printed cards became very popular in England and in Germany. It took Americans a little longer to warm up to the idea, but in 1875, in Boston, a lithographer called Louis Prang, who was a native of Germany, began publishing cards, earning him the title of Father of the American Christmas Card. And there you have all those Christmas cards that we have to this very day, although a lot of people are doing things electronically now. Anyway, I think that it's time to take a break, and then we will get back to dishing the dirt on design in just a few moments. Thanks.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you a homeowner who's trying to save on energy bills and go green at the same time? Tune into Energy Saving in the Home, brought to you by 521 Compressor Saver and Home Energy Consultants, with hosts Gary Parr and Dennis Seltzer. They have saved homeowners just like you as much as 65% on energy bills through energy efficiency practices. You'll learn about conservation, products, and services to reduce energy consumption and save you money. Be sure to listen to Energy Saving in the Home, live every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Make your dreams come true. When you want the very best excellence and elegance in interior design, contact Ann Asher, named one of the world's top 40 interior designers by the Robb Report. Visit her website at www.annasherinteriors.com or send an email to info@annasherinteriors.com. Many people are seeking to make a difference in the world, but few actually have the tools to do so. Every week, host Mary Beth Lodge and her guests will have you thinking forward and will give you the tips to keep your life, goals, priorities, and choices on track. The result is an easier, happier, and more inspired life. The name of the program is What Matters. Tune in every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 6 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. What really matters is the positive changes that you'll bring to your life and the world just by listening.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Dishing the Dirt on Design with Ann Asher and Eleanor Schrader Schapa. For more information about our program, please visit dishingthedirtondesign.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Dishing the Dirt on Design, and Ann and I are talking about holiday traditions. Ann, let's talk a bit about other holiday traditions such as Hanukkah and Kwanzaa.
Yes, I think that's a good idea. What about Hanukkah? Hanukkah is the Festival of Lights, and it is a Jewish holiday that is celebrated over 8 days. It celebrates the reclaiming and rededication of the Holy Temple in Jerusalem, coming from the time of the second century before Christ. And it was led by the Jewish Maccabee family in revolt against those who were trying to crush their faith. After cleansing the temple and preparing for its rededication, it was found that there was not enough oil to light the lamp of eternal light that was present in the houses of worship. Only a small amount of pure oil was found, enough for only one day of light. But a miracle happened. The light burned for 8 days. In remembrance of this miracle, one candle of the menorah, which is an 8-branch candelabra, is lit on each day of the 8 days of Hanukkah. Much-loved children, by the way, love this holiday because they not only get a gift of money for each night, if they're very lucky, but they also get a little sort of like spindly thing, a spinning top, which they call a dreidel. And on each side, there's a Hebrew letter, which in English translates into meaning a great miracle happened here.
And then Kwanzaa is a holiday celebrated by African Americans around the world in celebration of their African heritage. Kwanzaa is a Swahili word meaning fruits of the harvest. It's observed from December 26th to January 1st and involves the reinforcement of 7 basic values called Nguzo Saba of African culture, which contribute to building and reinforcing family, community, and culture among African American people, as well as Africans throughout the world African community. And these 7 precepts are unity, self-determination, collective work and responsibility, cooperative economics, purpose, creativity, and faith. And then in the Kwanzaa ritual, 7 candles called Mishuma Saba are placed in a candelabra. 3 green candles are placed on the left, 3 red candles are placed on the right, and a black candle placed in the center. 1 candle is lit each day of the Kwanzaa celebration, and they're lit from left to right. And then the colors are significant. Black symbolizes the faces of the African people. Red symbolizes the blood that they have shed. And green represents hope and the color of the motherland. And I think it's so important to talk about other people's holidays, too, because there's so many lovely traditions that occur all around the world. And so it's so nice to talk with you, Anne, about Hanukkah and Kwanzaa in addition to Christmas.
Right. I think it's very important for us all to be aware and to celebrate all kinds of things and to learn about them, even if we don't celebrate them. I'm sure that if we were to look even further, we would find other kinds of celebrations that may be different forms of these or for another holiday that
right.
they have or something like that.
Right.
But I think one of the things to keep in mind, that the reason that this time of year was chosen is that this is the winter solstice.
Yes.
And which happens when we have the longest day of the year, just like in the spring, in June, June 21st, you have the longest day of the year in the Northern Hemisphere. And a lot of the history of this period goes back to the Northern Hemisphere.
That's
which
right.
Doesn't mean that things were not happening in the Southern Hemisphere. I'm sure they were. It's that we just don't know that much about them.
That's right. And different traditions abound in different countries as well. So there's different ways of leaving gifts for Santa and different songs that people sing in their countries. And speaking of songs, Anne, do you have any favorite Christmas songs?
You know I'm in love with Rudolph. I mean, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is my favorite song. We used to have a toy Rudolph until he finally died after too many years of singing. And he would sing it for the children, and it was just wonderful. Now we're in search of another Rudolph who can sing, but we haven't found one yet.
Okay. And with the blinky lights.
Right, and the blinky lights and
that's
everything
right.
else. We have lots of fun with the holidays. I'm a child at heart anyway.
I know.
So Christmas just plays right into that spirit. And I love, especially with little kids, to do wonderful things with them because I feel Christmas is a day, is a wonderful holiday for children. It's a great time to play into children's fantasies and just have the world full of sunshine and happiness and all good things and peace to mankind and goodness especially to each other and to teach the children that too.
And I wish we could have this all year long, keep Christmas in our hearts all year long.
It really would be wonderful if we could.
Yeah.
I just hope one thing that I do want to bring out, and that is that we don't go so far with materialism at Christmas that we don't forget about what the spirit of Christmas is and how important it is to honor the really true spirit of the holiday. What religions teach us and what if you are not a religious person, which you know in your heart, which is good morality, kindness to others, peacefulness, good faith, and just decency of one person to another.
Absolutely. That is so dear, Anne. And, you know, this brings me to just the opposite side of the spectrum. We were talking about Christmas songs, and I have to laugh because one of my favorites is Santa Baby, which, of course, is all about materialism. And, of course, that's not about me because
not
my two other favorite songs are Oh Holy Night and Carol of the Bells, and I feel exactly the same way as you do. But it's such a delightful song with Betty Boop singing in that Bronx accent. You know, Santa Baby.
Yeah.
I've been awfully good. And I sometimes will sing this to my husband, Michael, and he just looks at me like I'm absolutely nuts, especially when I say, Santa baby, a 54 convertible to light blue. And he just walks away from me when I think it's just such a delightful song. But it's a very materialistic song, but I just love the silly accent to it. Well, anyway, Anne, I think we'll be back in just a few minutes with more holiday traditions on Dishing the Dirt on Design.
Sounds good to me.
Okay.
Thank you.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our All-Star team to answer your questions. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Make your dreams come true. When you want the very best excellence and elegance in interior design, contact Ann Asher, named one of the world's top 40 interior designers by the Robb Report. Visit her website at www.annasherinteriors.com or send an email to info@annasherinteriors.com.
Each week, Jimmy Gould brings you the stories and the people that you want to hear about. Tune in to A Current Life to hear about the journey to success, how our guests became the people they are today, and the highs and lows they experienced along the way. Each hour will leave you inspired and entertained as Jimmy gets up close and personal with every week's guest and shares ideas you can identify with and apply to your own life. A Current Life with Jimmy Gould airs Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Tune into Goddard Design every week for everything that is arts, interior design, and architecture. Host Chris Goddard will help you explore and invite creativity into your life. Our guests will include industry leaders and insiders who take you through the entire world of design and its many facets. You may not be immediately aware, but design is involved in nearly everything we do, from homes to clothing to food and drink. Tune into Goddard Design every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Dishing the Dirt on Design with Ann Asher and Eleanor Schrader Schapa. For more information about our program, please visit dishingthedirtondesign.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Dishing the Dirt on Design. We have been talking about holiday traditions.
And I think, Ann, that we should talk about some food, too. Oh,
nothing could be better than food.
Okay. I know how much you love gingerbread houses, and I know that you love to decorate them, and I want to hear about them. But first, I want to tell you about how they kind of got started. Queen Victoria and Prince Albert included gingerbread with a variety of other German Christmas traditions, which is how gingerbread cookies got started, because they're primarily associated with Christmas due to Prince Albert bringing them in with the German Christmas traditions. And I know that you love to talk about the decoration of the gingerbread
house. Oh, anything that I can decorate, being a decorator, I love
it. That's why she's
it.
An interior
it's
designer.
It's so much fun. It's so much fun to decorate the wonderful gingerbread houses and just to put together beautiful pictures and assortments of things and decorate the house and all kinds of things. It's just right up my alley. I love every minute of it. It's so much fun.
Did you eat them after you're finished?
Oh, I can't even wait. I can't even wait on eating them as I'm doing it. I can control myself on almost everything except chocolate and sweets.
We know.
That's my great love.
I would pick off the frosting. That's what I really want, because anybody who knows me knows that I'm just such a frosting queen. So
good.
I wouldn't even
we'll
let it dry and I'd pick it off. Well, and then also, candy canes are a tradition of Christmas. Legend has it that straight white sticks of candy were used as decoration on Christmas trees, and during the 17th century, the candy was shaped into shepherd's crooks, which we often identify with the shepherds at the birth of Jesus, and Sinterklaas coming, he had his cane with him. Now, evidently, at the suggestion of the choir master at Cologne Cathedral in Germany, these little canes were handed out to the children to keep them quiet during the nativity scene ceremonies. And then another cookie that I often looked at Christmas were Pfeffernuss, which are little round biscuits with ground nuts and spices. But then when I bit into them, they just weren't as sweet as I expected them to be. I think I was entranced by the powdered sugar. And so I would go around and kind of like take the powdered sugar off with my finger
or a tongue.
I know.
And a smile on your face.
Which my father caught me at one time, and he just had a good laugh at it. And then he ate them. So, you know, oh, my goodness. And then other thing about food is eggnog. And I don't know about you. Do you like eggnog?
I don't.
What a foul concoction.
I don't like eggnog.
Eggs and whiskey? Eggnog. Come on.
It's too rich for me.
No. That was never something for me. I do like the mulled apple cider. I think that's very
that's
nice.
That's very good, yeah.
But that's just kind of a nice traditions about food gathering at the holidays.
But, Eleanor, I love the Yule logs.
Yeah.
And, oh, they're so beautiful.
Yes.
They are so beautiful when they're decorated, and they're wonderful. They really are.
Ann and I don't even bother with the rest of dinner. We just go straight to dessert and slice into the Yule log.
We love the, what do they call it, the Viennese tables at some of these fancy places, which means it's loaded up with great cakes and pastries and puddings and all kinds of wonderful, wonderful things.
You know, speaking of celebrations, it just reminded me of the beautiful White House decorations and the White House trees. Anne, could you tell me more about what you've seen
there?
Well, the
White House is magnificent at Christmas. First of all, there are two areas to consider. One is outside where they have the big public tree mm-hmm. that anybody can see, which is beyond the south ellipse, which is the backside mm-hmm. of the White House, not the side with the big columns in front of it. And that is usually lit by the president and his family, or mm-hmm. if he is traveling out of town, the vice president and his family. And that is a small version of what goes on in New York at Rockefeller Center. But it's lovely. It's called, I think, the National Christmas Tree. But inside of the White House, especially the ground floor, that would mean the first floor, floor number one, the one that you enter on from the front door, it is turned into a magical world. There are multitudes of Christmas trees, and every single year, Eleanor, they have a new theme. And they work on this for maybe a year in advance. I'm not quite sure if I'm right if it's a year in advance, but many months in advance. But the big thing, the people who decorate it are all volunteers, very carefully chosen, and they are just delighted to be part of this. And as I said, each year they change what the decorations are and what the theme is. So in the years that I was in Washington, fortunate enough to be invited to see the Christmas decorations at the White House, it was just mind-boggling to me. And, of course, being interested in all that stuff, I was like a child mm-hmm. in ecstasy, going through and looking at these exquisite trees, mantle decoration, and the beauty of the White House as well, because you have different colored rooms. The way they decorated the White House is very, very interesting. When you, if you entered from the first, from the big columned entrance, the main entrance, you would come into a big, long hall that cuts across. Mm-hmm. And then you have, on the far right side, the state dining room.
Uh-huh.
And on the far left side of the building, you have what is known as the East Room. And that's the room where the president does his news conferences. And that is the room that has so many of the Christmas trees in it at one time. But in the center of that, which you would see as you walk in, right in front of you is the Blue Room. And the Blue Room looks out to the Washington Monument. So it is really beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
And then on either side, you have one that's the Red Room and another one that is the Green Room. And so you look at the Christmas decorations, and they fit so beautifully with the different colors that are in the White House against that background. They're absolutely exquisite. I haven't been there this year, nor have I seen pictures of it, so I can't tell you. I'm sure it's not completely decked up yet because it's not even the 1st of December. But for those of you who have a chance to peer at anything that they can see coming over the news, make sure that you take a good look at it because it's so exciting. It really is so exciting.
And we have a mutual friend who volunteers to decorate
the
tree.
That's right. Somebody who we've entertained on this, who's been one of our guests on this program has done some of the work for Christmas time in the White House, too. And we also, in addition to that, Eleanor and I have a very close friend who has volunteered there one year with putting everything together.
Yes.
So anyway, it is just wonderful. And if you can get a glimpse of it by looking at the news or seeing if you can see pictures on the internet of it, take a look because it's magnificent and it's very proud for us to be Americans and have such a beautiful thing in our midst. Now, the president will be having many, many parties during this season and all kinds of different groups, political, civic, things like that, are invited in at different times. You don't go without an invitation.
Uh-huh.
So don't show up. You won't get past the guards. Okay.
So maybe we should stay home and decorate our own Christmas trees.
I think that might be a better idea. But Eleanor, speaking about going back to our youth, all of us remember the time when we finally found out that Santa Claus and Christmas just really didn't
Oh my God!
Thought it had existed.
Yes.
Well, I have the most wonderful cousin in the world, and Eleanor knows my cousin. He's wonderful. And when we were very little children, and I mean very little, I think maybe I was five, and he may have been 1 or 2 years older than me. We were at his house, and our families are very close, so we were mm-hmm. celebrating Christmas together. Our fathers were brothers, and very, very close until each one of them died, and our aunt, too. Anyway, we all of a sudden were going and hauling down boxes from upstairs and putting them in front of the fireplace and putting up a stocking, too. And I looked at him, and I said, this doesn't make sense, just like that, 5 years old. And he said, why? He said, we're getting ready for Santa Claus. He was a year or two older mm-hmm. than me, so he was already clued in. And I said, but it doesn't work this way. Santa Claus brings the toys. We don't bring the toys. We don't bring the presents. Something doesn't make sense. And he didn't want to disappoint me. He didn't want to give away the story. So he said, don't even think about that. You're wrong. Just keep putting the boxes in front of the place so we have something to give our parents. So, you know, that was what he was saying to me. He didn't even know how to handle it. But he was trying to protect me from realizing that there really was no more Santa Claus down the chimney. And
ever the practical one, Anne.
Right. And, of course, I try to be practical and thrifty and things like that.
Yes.
And I realize that, I better not let him know because obviously he's trying to protect me. But I think that maybe Santa Claus is just at the department store who we went to see.
Yes.
And maybe he doesn't really come down that chimney. And then I went up and looked at that chimney and it looked very small. I stuck my head flying on my back up. And Santa Claus at the department store that we had just visited a few days before, he had such a big belly.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, I figured it out at 5. And I have to tell you, there was a little bit of sadness inside of me that year when I realized that it really wasn't the magic that I had believed every single word that I had read about, or not read about that much, but a little, but that my parents had told me and that the culture tells us all. But anyway, I did the same thing with my daughter, and she eventually figured it out, too. But my granddaughter, she pulled a trick on my son-in-law and I. We were the ones who prepared everything for the children, and they were supposed to be in bed sleeping. And one of them was. But as we were putting out the milk and the cookies and the celery and the carrots for Rudolph and all the mm-hmm. other Santa's reindeer, who did I spy down the hall peeking out
mm-hmm.
but my little granddaughter?
Mm-hmm.
And she was watching the whole mm-hmm. thing. Well, Daddy got very mad at her. Now, you know you weren't supposed to do this. So she, I didn't see anything. But she did. And then she was so excited that she had discovered what was going on that she started hopping for joy, just hopping for joy. And she hopped so hard that she hurt her ankle. So maybe that was God's way of letting her know you weren't supposed to do things that your parents told you and grown-ups told you not to do.
Well, I'm glad that
she just didn't want to give it up.
Yeah.
And she was checking us out that year, and she found out that, you know, she
Well, I'm glad that
to
she
give it
took
up.
It so well.
Yeah.
Because
well, she tried to put up a front to us that
right.
she still believed it.
Right.
But we knew well, and, you know, we said, well, you know, now you know. So
and I'm sure
it.
My brother protected me for years, too. I just remember how exciting it was to decorate the tree, as all families do. And my brother would wake us up, the two of us up, at 5:30 in the morning. And I remember one year my father just said, no, that's enough. You guys go back to bed. And it was just so exciting. And I remember finding out about Santa Claus not being real. I think I was more upset about the Easter Bunny because I said, does that mean the Easter Bunny doesn't exist either? And, you know, being the animal lover that I am, I was more upset about the bunnies. And but eventually you get over it. And there's more of a tradition of enjoyment of the holidays because there's the Christmas spirit and the holiday spirit. And I don't see a reason to take away Santa Claus out of the holidays because it's so much fun waking up and seeing all the presents. And I waited up as much as I could, and I remember my parents were just taking forever to go to bed. It's like, come on, you guys, we all have to go to bed. Santa's going to get here. The reindeer are waiting for their carrots, and Santa needs to eat, and come on, let's move it along here. And did you ever snoop for presents? Did you ever snoop?
Yeah, there was a closet. I found that closet, and my sister and I used to go look in there after that incident when I was five, and my cousin had protected me in his own way from finding out. But by then I knew, so I used to look at in the closet. But I couldn't tell what they were because everything was wrapped.
Oh, I made the mistake of snooping one year because I'd asked for a Barbie doll. And I'm still scarred from this, but I had asked for a blonde Barbie doll, and I snooped in the closet. My mom hadn't wrapped the Christmas presents yet, and there was this red-haired ponytailed Barbie doll, and I was just crestfallen by it because that was the nerdy Barbie doll, was the redheaded one. All the other little girls had cute little blonde ones like Anne, and then I'm going to be ostracized like Rudolph with this red-haired Barbie doll. Now, I still have it. I still have that Barbie doll to remind me that it's okay. You will turn out okay.
And she turned out magnificently, so don't any of you worry.
Even though you're ostracized for that red-haired Barbie doll, but we have these wonderful memories of Christmas, and it's nice to share them with all of our listeners.
Yes, it really is. It's lovely to share them, and we hope that all of you will have the most wonderful holiday, whatever the holiday or multi-holidays that you celebrate, and that hopefully you will be spending them with family, friends, and people who you really enjoy. And for those of you who are traveling and are far away, have a wonderful holiday, too. Eleanor and I want to wish you the best of everything and to tell you how appreciative we are for your listening to our show every week or going to the podcast and listening to us. We really thank all of you, and we feel, though, if we haven't seen you in person, that we are friends and good friends. So thank you very much. Everybody have a wonderful holiday. May there be peace in the world. May there be good health. And may our economy get much better.
Oh, yes.
Thank you all.
And Anne, I echo those thoughts about embracing each other in the holidays. And we are so appreciative of our audience. We're very appreciative of the people at Voice America. They are just so professional.
And they're wonderful
to us. And Anne and I are very blessed. I am very blessed to have my beautiful students and friends around me, and especially Anne. And I want to wish all of you the most happiest of holidays and Merry Christmas. So thank you for joining us today, and I hope that you'll stay in touch with us with our Facebook page. We're going to put up lots of pictures for you. I've got Santa and his Yule goat for you, and the first Christmas card I've posted for all of you. So we look forward to talking with you next week. So this is Dishing the Dirt on Design, and we will see you next time. Thank you, Anne.
And thank you, Eleanor, and thank you, everybody out there and at Voice America. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you again for listening this week. Ann Asher and Eleanor Schrader Schaffel will be back next Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time, for another edition of Dishing the Dirt on Design on the Voice America Variety Channel. Have a great week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.